Canto 1, Chapter 18. Maharaj Parikshit cursed by a Brahmin boy. Shuka said, "He, Parikshit, who in the womb of his mother was scorched by the weapon of the son of Drona, did not die thanks to the mercy of the Supreme Lord Krishna, whose actions are wonderful. Cursed by an angry Brahmin to expire because of a snake bird, he was not overwhelmed by the great fear of death because he had surrendered his heart to the Supreme Lord." After having understood the actual position of the Invincible One, he left behind the ones surrounding him and, as a disciple of the son of Vyasa, gave up his material body at the bank of the Ganges. They who remember the feet of the Supreme One glorified in the verses and know to appreciate and live with his nectarine stories will, at the time of their death, not be confounded. The personality of Kali, even though present everywhere, cannot flourish as long as the mighty ruler, the son of Abhimanyu, is the one emperor. The moment the Supreme Lord left this earth, Kali, he who promotes irreligion, appeared in this world. The emperor never was of any enmity towards Kali. Like a bee going for the nectar, he enjoyed the essence that auspicious things soon lead to perfection, while acting differently, that is never the case. Kali, who in the eyes of the weaker ones appears to be a great power, is to the self-controlled soul a cause of apprehension, and thus Parikshit, as a tiger among men, was the one to take care among the careless. Upon your request, I have related almost all the stories that in relation to Vasudeva can be told about the pious Parikshit. Those persons who desire their welfare should take notice of each and every story about the Supreme Lord's wonders, transcendental qualities and uncommon deeds I spoke about. The sages said, "O Sutta, may you live a long, happy and particularly eternally famous life, for you, speaking so nicely about Krishna, grant us mortals the nectar of eternity. With the performance of this sacrifice, the outcome of which is uncertain, we are black of the smoke, but with the pleasing of Govinda's feet by your good self, we have the nectar of a lotus flower." The attainment of higher worlds or liberation from matter, not even mentioning the attainment of worldly benedictions by those who inevitably had for their death, is nothing compared to finding but for a moment one's perfect balance in enjoying the company of a devotee of the Lord. Once having acquired the taste, someone will never get enough of relishing the nectar of the stories about the greatest and only refuge among the living beings, he whose transcendental qualities could never be estimated by even the greatest masters of mystic union like Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva. Be so kind, O learned one, to describe to us, who are eager to hear about it, his impartial transcendental activities. For he, Lord Hari, the one and only shelter for the greatest of the great, is for your good self the leading supreme personality. As a first-class devotee of great intelligence, Parikshit evidently attained the lotus feet of him who has Garuda in his banner, after having received from the son of Vyasa the knowledge about that what one calls the path of liberation. Please tell us, therefore, the supreme and purifying narrations of these so wonderful devotion in yoga. Describe, the way they were explained to Parikshit, the activities of the unlimited one dear to the pure devotees. Sutta said, "Just see how we, although of a mixed birth, by serving those advanced in knowledge like Shuka, clearly have been promoted to a higher birth. Being connected in conversation with the great devotees will soon purify one from suffering a lack in quality because of one's birth. And what to say of those who sing the holy name under the protection of exclusively the great devotees who belong to him, he who is called Ananta because of the fact that he is unlimited in his potency and unmeasurably great in his qualities. To give a description of him, the one unlimited in his attributes and equal to none, it suffices to say that the goddess of fortune, while rejecting others who asked for it, wished to serve in the dust of his feet, while he himself never asked for it. Who else would be worth the position of carrying the name of Supreme Lord besides Mukunda, from whose toenails the water emanated of the Ganges that was collected by Brahmaji and purifies Lord Shiva and the entire universe? Those in control of themselves, who are firmly attached to him, are capable of instantly leaving aside the attachments of the gross body and the subtle mind, and go away to take shelter of the highest stage of perfection, the stage of life characterized by non-violence and renunciation. Because you, sages, who are as strong as the sun, ask me, I can give you an account of the knowledge I have acquired. It is, in this matter, as with the birds who fly as far as they can. I can enlighten you on Vishnu as far as my realization permits. One day, when Parikshit was hunting stags with bow and arrows, he got very fatigued, hungry and thirsty. Looking for a reservoir of water, he entered the hermitage of the famous Rishi Shamika, where he saw the sage silently sitting down with his eyes closed. Having restrained his sense organs and breath, he, with his mind and intelligence inactive and in quality equal to the Supreme Absolute, being unaffected, had achieved transcendence above the three states of consciousness. He was covered by his long compressed hair, as also by the skin of a stag. The king, with a dry palate finding him in that state, asked for water. Not being properly received with a place to sit, water and nice words, he felt disrespected and therefore got angry. O Brahmins, plagued by hunger and thirst, being inconsiderate himself, his anger and hostility against the Brahmin was unprecedented. Having lost his respect, he with the tip of his bow picked up a lifeless snake and placed it angrily over the shoulder of the sage as he left to return to his palace. There he wondered whether or not this meditative state of withdrawal from the senses with closed eyes was a false pretended trance maintained by the sage because he was just a lower ruler. When the sage's son, named Sringi, who was a very powerful personality, heard of the grief the king had caused his father while he was playing with some children, he said this. Just see how irreligious these rulers are. Enriching themselves like crows, they, the servants, like dogs keeping watch at the door, behave badly unto their master. The sons of the ruling class are to guard the Brahminical order like watchdogs. On what grounds would he, who is supposed to stay at the door, deserve it to enter the house of the master and eat from the same pot? Since Krishna, our protector, who is the supreme lord and ruler of those upstarts, has departed, I shall today punish them myself. Just witness my power. Thus, with eyes red hot of anger, speaking to his playmates, the son of the Rishi touched the water of the Kaushika River and released the following thunderbolt of words. Verily, 7 days from now, the wretched soul of the dynasty who offended my father will, because of breaking with the etiquette, be bitten by a snake bird. When the boy thereafter returned to the hermitage, he saw the snake over his father's shoulder and cried loudly over that sorry plight. O Shaunaka, when the Rishi heard his son lamenting, He was born in the family of Anghiera, slowly opened his eyes and saw the dead snake on his shoulder. Throwing it aside, he asked, "My dear son, what are you crying about? Has someone wronged you?" This being requested, the boy told him everything. After hearing about the curse pronounced against the king, who, as the best among men, did not deserve that, he did not compliment his son, but lamented instead, "Alas, what a great sin you have committed yourself today in awarding such a heavy punishment for an offense as insignificant as this. In fact, no one may ever place a sovereign ruler, a god among men who is known to be transcendental, on an equal footing with common men. Your command of intelligence is immature. Completely protected by his unsurpassable prowess, his subjects enjoy all prosperity. Oh, my boy, the Lord who carries the wheel of the chariot is represented by this monarch. Once he is abolished, this world will be full of thieves who immediately will vanquish the unprotected souls like their lamps. Because of negating the monarch, from this day on, the reaction upon this sin will overtake us, causing great social disruption. The wealth everywhere will be seized by thieves, and among the people there will be murder and molestation, as also abuse of money, women and animals. The righteous civilization of humanity united in proper conduct, of progress in the vocations and stages of life according to the Vedic injunctions, will at that time systematically be vanquished. As a consequence, the economy, then only serving sense gratification, will result in an unwanted population on the level of dogs and monkeys. The protector of the religion, the king, is a highly celebrated emperor, a direct, first-class devotee of the Lord, a saint of nobility, and a great performer of horse sacrifices. When he, hungry and thirsty, is stricken with fatigue, he never deserves it to be cursed by us like this." The sage thereupon addressed the supreme, all-pervading Lord to beg his pardon for the great sin committed by the child immature of intelligence against a sinless, worthy, and subordinate soul. He prayed, "Whether they are defamed, cheated, cursed, disturbed, neglected, or even when one of them is killed, the forbearing devotees of the Lord for certain never will avenge themselves for any of this." The sage thus regretted the sin of his son and certainly did not think that the insult by the king was a sin. Generally, the saints in this world prove themselves not distressed or happy when they by others are involved in worldly dualities, for they are situated in the transcendence of the soul.